Gemara in the end of Parnas, the Gemara in the end of Masech Sechon Zara says as follows. The Gemara says that Tashin Abbas Gemara Peshut of Bemayim, that the Caleb and the Mikdash can be kashed through Agala. Now the obvious kasha is, if the Gemara deals with, what do you mean? How could you kasha Caleb through Agala if they were Balea through Lipun? If they were Balea through Eish, and this Balea through Eish requires Lipun. Agala is not good enough. As Shadarko is Balipun. Shadarko Be'eish rather is Balipun. You need Eish. So we started to discuss this a little bit the other day. The Gemara has a bunch of Terutz. One of them is that Shaydi Kashim Shabachot. That's the magic line. And how do you understand magic? That each day you use the Kalim Viter, and each one is going to be a Haggadah on the previous day. When you constantly use the Kalim, each day's cooking is going to cash in the flavors from the day before, before they ever have a chance to become Nosar. So they're never going to have problems with the Blios and the Kalim. Now, if I bring a Shlamim on Sunday morning, it's not going to become Nosar until Shkia on Monday. So as long as I used it on Monday to cook something else, it will never become Nosar, because the Nosar will have been kashered out. So it sounds like when you constantly cook, it takes away the need for Libum. So the Gemara then says, Ihachi Hagala Amai, so then why do you need Hagala at all? You shouldn't eat Hagala either, if you're cooking every day. So it shouldn't require any kashra. Why does the Pasuk say that you need to do Hagala? I mean, we're forgetting what the Gemara's original kashra was. The Gemara's original kashra was, why aren't we doing kashra at all? The Gemara's original kashra was, why aren't we doing a subpar type of kashra? So the answer the Gemara gives seems to say, you don't need the kashra at all, because each day is a gilul chaveiro. So why do you need Hagala at all? So the Gemara says kasha. So it sounds like you don't really need Hagala as long as you keep cooking in the kitchen. That's all you're going to need in order to kasha the kitchen. So the Rashba points out, and this is quoted at length in the Beis Yosef over here. So all I'm telling you is what it says in the Beis Yosef, that the Rashba points out in the Torah Sefaris, that it sounds from the Gemara that cooking equals kasha. That if you cook in a kli, that will actually kasha the kli without libun or hagala. So the Gemara seems to mean that by cooking the following day, the blios of the day before are extracted, they get mixed into the food, and new blios go into the pot from today's food, but they're all removed from yesterday's food. So you don't have to worry about yesterday's food. Doesn't make sense, though, the Rashba points out, because the Rashba points out that on the surface, the Gemara doesn't make sense for two primary reasons. There are two problems with relying on today's cooking to kasher yesterday's blios. Problem number one is that cooking would be the equivalent of hakala, but the Gemara's kasher was that these things need libun. Meaning, if you require a libun, how can cooking in a kli take care of a libun problem? Hagala is not as strong a form of kashering as libun is. Second problem is, when you kasher, even with hagala, you need to kasher the entire pot. You can't have like some of the pork go into the hot water and the rest of the pork not go into the hot water when you kasher with hagala. The entire pork, the entire pot, the entire whatever that you're kashering needs to go into the water. When you cook in a pot, you don't have the entire pot touching the boiling water that you're cooking inside the pot. How high do you fill up the pot? 70%. 80%. Do you fill up the outside of the pot? You don't do any of that. You don't fill it up all the way to the top and then have it overflow on the sides. So you're not getting, when you're in the course of natural cooking, it doesn't even meet the criteria for Agala. So number one is, we need a libun. Two is, doesn't even meet the criteria for Agala if you're cooking normally. So when there's Isser, it has to be, you have to remove the entirety of the Isser. If there's Bliya al Yaday Yimayim, you need to do Agala fully. And if it's Bliya al Yaday Eish, you need to do libun fully. You can't do partially. You could do part at a time, that you're left to. Right, if you're kashering the fork, let's say for Pesach, it's got chametz blios. So you could stick one end of the fork in the boiling water, wait until it comes to a boil again, then stick the other end of the fork into the boil. That you're allowed to do. Right, that we sometimes have to do with larger kelim that aren't going to all fit in the water at one time. Right, that's different than tevilas kelim. When it comes to tevilas kelim, obviously in a mikveh, something needs to be completely submerged all at once. You can't do a piecemeal. But when it comes to kashering, you can do piece by piece, but ultimately you got to get the whole thing. So the way that we're relying on kashering, frankly, Rashba, is that you're kashering through cooking, well, it doesn't do it. It doesn't cover the entirety of the kli. The fact that I'm cooking pasta in the pot today is only going to kasher a section. It's not going to kasher the entirety of the pot. So that's the second problem. So the Rashba answers that this kind of kashering only works because, meaning this doubly subpar form of kashering, in that it really needed Liban and you're only doing Hagalah, and it's not even a real Hagalah, right? This doubly subpar form of kashering only works because it was Hetera Bala in the first place. That at the time that the Bleos went into the pot, it was perfectly kosher Bleos. It's only later that they become Asr. They only become Nosar after this Man Achilas HaKorban is over. So when there is Isr, that's Nivla into a pot, if you have Chazer, you have Nevela, you have Behemoth Temeya, Trefa, whatever, that gets Nivla into a pot, so then Ein Achinami, then you need real Kashering. This type of doubly subpar kashering is only good enough because it was hetera bala. When it's isser, it would need to be removed fully. So if there was blia alidei mayim, you need full hagala. Blia alidei esh, you would need full libur if it was isser. And you needed to cover the entire pot. But when you're kashering something from hetera bala, here's the key phrase that the Rashba has. All you need is to be maklish the tam. You need the tam to become a tam kolish. You don't need the tam to be completely extracted or completely obliterated. Extracted would be hagala, obliterated would be libur. We'll get that later in the year. You just need that the tam becomes weakened, that the status of the tam becomes weakened. And that's enough to kashrus. So by a davar asur, when you have an isura bala, the tam kalush is not going to help. Weakening the tam is not going to help. You have to obliterate or fully extract the tam. But by davar mutar, there's a cloud that an isser cannot be chal with the tam kalush. That the isser cannot get off the ground when the starting point is a very shvach tam of the isser. By shvach, I mean like the yivish, not like. Like favorable, I mean, like a very weak tam of the Isser. So now, outside of the Mikdash, usually what we're dealing with is Isurabah, right? Milchus Kashrus, we deal with Nevela and Trefa and everything else, so Tam Kalish doesn't make a difference to us. When it comes to Basu B'chalot, though, Tam Kalish becomes very relevant, because Basu B'chalot issues are often issues of Hetera Bala. Basu gets Nivla into a pot, or Chalot gets Nivla into a pot. That's all Hetera Bala. So if I cook some potatoes in a meat pot, in a flesh pot, it's going to weaken the Tam Basu that's in the pot. And now, L'chol, I can cook milk in that pot, because the Tam Kalish is not going to create an Isur Basu B'chalot. Meaning, once I've sufficiently, says the Rashba, once I've sufficiently weakened the tam basa that's in the Dofne Hakadema, now I'm not going to be able to create basa b'chala by putting milk in that pot, because the flesh that's in the pot is very shvach, it's very, very weak to begin with, so it's not going to create a sense of basa b'chala. Then the Rashba says that this yisod is pashut based on the Gemara about Nachbar Nach. We're going to discuss in much greater detail in Siman Sadi Hey. The Gemara discusses, what if you have Dabim Sha'alu Mika'ara, what if you have a flesh plate, and you put hot fish. Fish is the prototypical example, you have to get used to this, prototypical example in Otskos B'chalim of a part of food. It's a weird example of a part of food, because you're not allowed to have fish with meat, Yishum Sakana, and fish with milk, even the base says it. But it's a strange example, but fish is the prototypical example of a part of food. So it discusses Doug and Shalom the Carver, that you have fish, a classic part of food, that gets put on a flesh plate, right? Hot fish on a flesh plate. So the Gemara discusses, is it Asur La'achlom Kutach or Mutar La'achlom Kutach? Kutach, as we've discussed, is that funny Talmudic food, but one of its unique characteristics is that it's melechim. So am I allowed to eat that fish with melechim, or am I not allowed to eat that fish with melechim? So the Gemara says, a mutalachlo kutach, because it's not parnat. This is what we call not parnat te'atema, that the flesh gave tam into the ka'ara, and then that tam went from the ka'ara into the fish, so that was no same tam, bar no same tam, and now, only at the point of no same tam, bar no same tam, where it's already two steps removed from the original meat, now it mixes with melvin, now it mixes with kutach. Well, that is such a weakened state of tam, by the time it's already doubly removed from the meat, that it's not going to create a sense of basa b'chalot, says the Rashba. Why? Because that's the principle of tam kalish. That you see that when it comes to basa b'chalot, when it comes to something that originates as heter, we assume it can become weakened to the point that it won't be able to be miyatzer and nisr, won't be able to create an issur. So if you have that hang up or not, you have that over here as well when it comes to being makhlish shatam in a pot by doing a doubly subpar form of kashrut. Good, so that is the Rashba. Beis Yosef says, I do not know how one can accept this Rashba. It says, if the Rashba were correct, then if you can cook kachim meat to kashrut, or let's say potatoes, to remove fleshik tam, then says the Beis Yosef, if the Rashba is correct, obviously you would not be allowed to use milk to remove fleshik tam, unless you can make sure that the tam basar coming into the milk would be batel b'shishim, which is mitzius, that's impossible. And he points out, Sarach lomar shu sarar, dal karch lo shari arashba, he's quoting Rabbi Parent, dal karch lo shari arashba, ela b'shabishal ba yirokos fail to ben. That, you know, when do we say that today's cooking is going to kasher yesterday's tam? That's if you have a pyre of food that you're cooking in a fleshik pot that will kasher out yesterday's fleshik tam. But if you're taking milk and cooking the pot, that's not going to work. The avogav the kol shein basi yom shish the chalav shish and kibin the chalav shari havle kibishal bayirakos. I one might have thought, well, once it's more than 24 hours since the bishal of the flesh, or you have shishim in the chalav, can I get the flesh? I would think that's the same thing as cooking part of food, because it's not creating basar b'chalav. Keeping the chalav who asr b'basar, ain't a b'din shehu agorim het of the k'deiros basar b'basar. He says, I could come up with a halach of argument, unbelievable, he says, that you could use milk to kasher a fleshik pot. Right? I could make a reasonable halachic argument that milk could be used to kasher a fleshik pot to turn it not fleshik anymore. How so? If the time of the flesh is more than 24 hours old, or if I have shishim in the milk, can I get the time of the flesh? I cooked 1 ounce of flesh in the pot yesterday, this morning, and now I'm cooking 65 ounces of milk in the pot. So now it's going to be mevatel, the time of the flesh, and therefore, since it's a tam kalush, even though I'm just cooking in the pot, and I'm not actually, the pot is, forget about the milk, obviously is going to be kosher, because whatever meat is going to be above the shishim, the pot's going to be kosher now. The pot It's not going to be fleshes anymore. That's what Beis Yosef says. He said that's what a logical argument could be made. But he said, but that's off the wall. That's insanity. How could it be that you could take milk to kasher a fleshes of a pot? He said, it just can't be. He says, ain't no b'din shehu hamgore b'hetel. There's possible of hashem l'chol. Just can't be. Inami, another possibility. Why milk can't work? Either just like, come on, that's ridiculous, or did dafka b'mayim who become a rashbi sheish mekach lahaklish ulahaklish bela ha'isr. Avol chalav ein b'kach lahaklish kotach bela ha'isr. He says it could be that when the Rashba says that by cooking something today, the kasher yesterday b'liya, it only means water. But water can weaken a hetera bala b'liya to the point that it's not going to be problematic anymore. It will never generate an issur. But maybe anything but water, including milk, is not going to be able to have that impact. Then the Beis Yosef says, but you know what? The Rashba is wrong anyway. This principle of tam kalish is not true. And he said, what was the big raya of the Rashba? It's because he learned our Gemara in Avodah Zarah that said, kol yom, that each day's cooking becomes a giul l'chaveru, becomes a hagala of yesterday's cooking. That's not what the Gemara means. Look at the way Tosfos learns that Gemara. Tosfos, right, the way the Rashba learned that Gemara is, when I cook today, it kashers yesterday's bliya. I don't know what I'm doing. It's cooking. I'm not doing a real hagala and the whole kli, and it's not really doing a libum when it really needs a libum. Oh, it must be that there's this chiddush called tam kalish. That's not what it means. Says Tosfos. Tosfos chulin cooking all those days. We don't rice it. There would be no problem even if there was no sir in the walls of the pot. Because it's both barov. Because we don't rice it. Min domino is butter. That's what the Gemara meant. When I cook today's kachim meat in a pot from yesterday, I don't have to worry about the nosar b'lios that are coming out of the pot, because those nosar b'lios are kot b'rov. Meaning, in a chinami, I don't have shishin in today's kachim that I'm cooking, connected the b'lios that were trapped in the domain at the dera, but on a darais level, I don't need shishin. On a darais level, I only need rov. Me darais, I'm in b'mino, it's going to be batel b'rov. The reason you normally have to kasher kelim is because normally it's min b'sheinu mina. Rashishin is daraisa. Meaning, normally I can't just rely that whatever I'm going to cook in the kli today is a min b'mino, whatever I cooked yesterday. unless you use it for the same thing every day, like in the Beis HaMikdash, where they're cooking the same basic chavanos and the same kachin every single day. So it's going to be min b'mino when it comes to basar kachin. But it's what Tosfos essentially does is he takes that Gemara of Zara and says that is unique entirely to kachin. It has no application outside of the world of kachin. So whereas the Rashba said, no, it's telling us a principle called when there's hetera bala, you can kashra al yidei be maknish the tam rather than pulverizing or extracting the tam. Right? That's a chiddush. Where else do you have that? Well, you don't have it by nevela, treif, and beimin, but you do have it by basar b'chala. Basar b'chala is also hetera bala. So the principles the Gemara uses for kachin, says the Rashba, can work for basar b'chala also. But says Tosfos, no, it doesn't. The principles that we use by kachin were dafka for kachin. We expect kachin to rely on the fact that min b'mino is batal b'rov. So it's all going to be batal b'rov. So that's the Rashba. It's interesting that at the Nekut Sakesef that we're about to quote, the Nekut Sakesef says that Rashba was muskum b'kol aposkim. Doesn't seem that the Beis Yosef got the memo or that any of the later Achronim got the memo that it's muskum b'kol aposkim. Sometimes maybe as a sniff, well, I'll help. But it's hard to say that such a thing as muskum b'kol aposkim. Now, the Beis Yosef learns, as we just pointed out, that Tosfos disagrees with Rashba. Why? Because Tosfos understands that kol yom nasa giyu l'chavero differently than the Rashba did. And therefore, there's no basis for the principle called tam kalish. But that Gemara that the Rashba used as his basis for Tam Kalish means something else entirely. The Rush is also against the Rashba. The Shach in the Kutis Kesef, which, as I pointed out the other day, really belonged in the Shach. It was just accidentally left out of the initial printing, so it was inserted into the Nekudas HaKesef. The Taz deals with this Rashba also. The Taz deals with three Rishonim. What makes this siman long is just the long, long Taz. So the Taz deals with three different unique Shitas from Rishonim, the middle of which is the Shitas HaRashba. Over here as well. But anyway, the Taz, by the way, is not a normal Taz either, because he's not really commenting on the Shulchan Aruch. The Taz is really commenting on the Torah. The Taz was a commentary for both. You have to sometimes be careful. See, he just put it all on the Shulchan Aruch, but sometimes he's actually not really commenting on the Pesach of the Shulchan Aruch. He's just commenting on the Torah. But anyway, so the in the Kutis HaKesef, the Shach is not so sure that Tosfos and the Rashba disagree. He's not so sure that Tosfos rejects the principle of Tam Kalish. I mean, the fact that Tosfos gives a different answer and explains that, oh, kol yom nasa giyu l'chaveiro means that it's batal b'rov, and therefore you don't have to worry about becoming nosar, it doesn't necessarily mean that Tosfos rejects Rashba. Meaning, let's say I don't have a nosar problem when I cook it in the same pot tomorrow. Some of the tam of yesterday's shlamin mixes with today's shlamin. So the entire thing should still be limited to the earlier karma, and you should be a violation of the mighty zman achil shlamim. Meaning, let's say I'm cooking right now before yesterday's bluyos became nosa. So the issue is not how am I kashering the nosa bluyos out of the pot. There are no nosa bluyos. All the bluyos in the pot are still kosher. So what's the issue? What am I doing? I'm taking yesterday's Karmic Shlomi. Yesterday was Tuesday, right? So let's say I brought a Karmic Shlomi at noon on Tuesday, as our bus was getting closer to Washington. So noon on Tuesday, I managed to bring a Karmic Shlomi. So what's the Zman Achil Karmic Shlomi? Shnei Yomim Olai Lecha. So it's Tuesday night, and it's all day Wednesday. And now at this point, at 1:47 on Wednesday, right, I cook another Karmic Shlomi. In the same pot, in the same kli. So there's no nosar. It's not nosar. There's nothing nosar yet. Everything is still fresh bleels. What's it going to do? Something else is another issue. Today's karma shlomim should have been able to be eaten Wednesday night and all day Thursday. But now, because it has bleels of yesterday's karma shlomim, I have to be ma'id, this manachila, to finish it by shkia tonight. I'm going to have to finish it by tonight. Very different than kashering from nosar. It's a matter of what impact it's going to have on the carbon meat that I'm cooking right now. So the Balei Tosfos weren't asking how you can cook with a pot later on after it becomes nosar. They were asking about how you can be maybe kachim ubeis apsul by cooking today shlamim. And on that, Tosfos says, don't worry, it's batal b'rov, so it's not a problem of being maybe kachim ubeis apsul. It's essentially what Tosfos is bothered by is a different kashya than what the Rashba is bothered by. The Rashba is wondering about kashering out nosar. The Tosfos is wondering about about being Mainz Manachila. So Rashba, who's asking about kashering Noser, says, yeah, as long as it comes to Tan Kolosh, while it's still Mutter, it won't become Noser. You will have kashered it out. Even if you don't do any further kashering, whatever time is left in the Dofne Adedera, by the time you're finished cooking today's carbon, will never become Noser. Whatever time from yesterday's carbon was left in the Dofne Adedera will never be Noser, because it will become Tan Kolosh, and it's a Deir Avala. And that's my big Kiddush, says the Rashba. And, you know, when Zekezer says, everyone loves this Rashba, even though not everyone does. Tosfos, however, is dealing with a different question. Tosfos is not dealing with the pot, he's dealing with the food I'm cooking in the pot. Today's Karm Shlomo, we have to cook in the pot. I want to know, why isn't it a problem being the mind is Manachila? So Tosfos says, yeah, because whatever comes out, it's Bachel Perol. In other words, it's not the mind is Manachila, because Mimimino is Bachel Perol. So it could be, says the Pitzakasa, that the Rashba and Tosfos are not necessarily, they're not mutually exclusive, because you do have to deal with both issues. So could be Tosfos dealing with one issue, Rashba's dealing with the other issue. But Beis Yosef anyway rejects the Rashba. So basically, Beis Yosef and the Rashba disagree whether you can kasher a meat pot by just simply cooking with it, using the principle of Tom College. Now, if you place the pot, I want to turn it apart, you get that shayla a lot. Sometimes people, and you're not trained for that shayla, right? You're only trained for shaylas of, I took a place pot and I cooked milk in it by accident, or I took a, you know, something like that. A lot of the shaylas we get is, I took a part of a pot, and I did, so as soon as they say the word part, it's fine. Yeah, but they don't want to know if it's fine. They want to know if it's fleshing or if it's milk. Meaning that, of course, everything's kosher. But they want to know now in the future when I use this pot, is it still a part of a pot? Or the fact that I did something fleshing with it, is it going to make it into fleshing? But according to the Rashba, no problem. Just cook potatoes in it. You think it became fleshing yesterday? Cook potatoes in it today. You'll be fine. And then I will cut. Don't cook milk in it, because Beis Yosef thinks that's off the wall. To cook milk in it, to kasher from flesh. So don't do that. We'll cook potatoes in it. It'll be fine. And it won't be a flesh kapad anymore. So the Beis Yosef tries to show that Gedolei Rishonim reject the Rashba. And he bases himself largely on the Rabbeinu Baruch of the Sefer Truma, which is stam an important Maramakam. Rabbeinu Baruch is a Chiddush. He says that if you use a pot even for water within the last 24 hours, it reinvigorates whatever tam is in the pot that was problematic to begin with and restarts the clock on Ben Yom. Meaning, I have tam of nevela in this pot, and I need to wait till it's less than tam of dam. But then, 15 hours after tam nevela, after it was cooked, nevela was cooked in the pot, I just heat up some water in the pot. And now, 15 hours after that, I want a kasher, and I want to heat up something else in the pot. So when I heat up water, Rabbeinu Baruch holds, it restarts the clock. On the Ben Yomo status of it. So if I cook chazer at 12 o'clock and then water at 5 o'clock, the water now becomes chanan and gives that time back into the pot. So now I need to start counting the 24 hours again. So that's the chid, right? But the water becomes chanan, so it didn't last the veil on the water, and therefore it goes right back into the pot, and now it's a fresh time of chazer that went right back into the pot, and therefore I need to start the 24 hour clock. That is the chumrah of Rabbeinu Baruch. It's a famous book. Now, the smak doesn't love it. He says, you know, chanan has its limits, meaning we know chanan has its limits. And Smak thinks, I think this is one of, the Smak says, I think this is one of the limits of Chanan. Meaning, let's assume like Rabbeinu Tam, that Chanan applies to Shari Sukh, right? Throw Rabbeinu Frey. Let's assume like Rabbeinu Tam, Chanan applies to Shari Sukh. We know that Chanan can't cause Blios to go places that they otherwise would have gone. And you're not going to have Blios travel further just through Chanan, further than they would have been able to travel in the first place. The Nesar can't be stronger than the original Issa. Right? That we know. That's a limitation of Chanan. That's Shita Satosis. Now, we assume Chanan does have an impact on the Shir. Right? Chanan is the din and Shir of it. That I would have thought I only need Shishim Kineged, the original Isser. No, Chanan tells me I need Shishim Kineged, the whole Chaticha that is now laced with this Isser. It's a din and Shir. But it's not a din in the strength of the Isser. So, Rabbeinu Baruch says, okay, what if it's not about the distance through which the Tam Nevela travels, nor about the shear of how much I need for Bittul? What if it's about time? Does Chanan affect time? Does it get to restart a clock? Right? Meaning Chanan, for the fact that I'm cooking water in a pot that 5 hours earlier I cooked the vegla, do I say that the water becomes Chanan so much so that now the bleels in the pot are fresh bleels? So one could argue that the water which only became usher from the time this and can't make a pot tray for longer than the original bleels when we made the pot tray. And the original bleels, the time of the original bleels is going to expire in 19 hours. So the fact that I cooked water in it right now, 5 hours after the time of the veil, is not going to change that. But Beit Baruch then adds that if we're not dealing with Isir, but we're dealing with Basim Chalav, meaning I cooked meat at 12 o'clock, and then water at 5 o'clock, and then milk the next day at 3 o'clock between 12 and 5, right? So I cook milk 24 hours after the original cooking of meat, but less than 24 hours after cooking the water. We don't say Chaticha Nas is Basim. We only say Chaticha Nas is Beit. There's no such thing as Chaticha Nas is Flesh. Those things chaticha nas milk. Those chaticha nas veil. So Rabbi Baruch says, even my chumrah that cooking something else in the pot will reinvigorate is only when it's isur pot. It's not going to be so true of something that's heter pot, which will be very helpful when it comes to kashrut for Pesach. In fact, this comes up a lot of times. People cut a kashrut the sink for Pesach. What's the problem with kashrut the sink for Pesach? Before you kashrut, you need to leave something. Unused for 24 hours. So I may be able to leave it unused with chametz for 24 hours. I may have gotten rid of most of my chametz anyway. But how do you not use the sink in the kitchen, especially if you only have one sink? Right? How are you not going to use the sink? So this might be helpful. Right? We'll get to it when we get to kashrut. Right? That the fact that chametz b'fei pesach is a terrible, it's not a terrible. So it could be that you're not going to reinvigorate the time within 24 hours. The simpler reitza is kasher right after Shabbos. And right after Shabbos, usually you didn't use your sink for any hot water over Shabbos. If you did, then you would probably over melacha d'oraisa bishul anyway, so you know, the in a bin yomel stuff's not going to get you way too much. Right? But if you're using for cold water, then it's nothing. So Beis Yosef writes that this is the right. It says, if the Rashba was correct, then the Rabbi Baruch is unnecessary. Why? Because if I cooked water at 5 o'clock, I'd be allowed to cook milk at 6 o'clock, because the 5 o'clock cooking already kashered out the meat that was in the pot. But according to the Rashba, I cooked flesh at one of the times you gave 12 o'clock, right? I cooked flesh at 12 o'clock. Then I cooked water 5 hours later at 5 o'clock. Flesh at noon, I cooked water at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. So the shayla was, tomorrow at 3 o'clock, can I cook milk? When I cook milk, is it going to trape it up? Right? Is it considered any ben yom tomorrow at 3 o'clock? According to the Rashba, forget about tomorrow at 3 o'clock. 5:01, you're good. You can already cook milk. Why? Because it was a tam kalush through the bishul. And by making a tam kalush on a teira bala through the bishul, it's going to kasher out the fleshic status of the pot. So must be from the fact that Rabbeinu Baruch is even a discussion that Rabbeinu Baruch is against the Rashba. It must be we reject the Rashba lalach. Wow. Then the shach at the end of the piece in the Pesach Kesef thinks that the Rashba and Rabbeinu Baruch maybe can be reconciled. Why? So he has the following interesting chat. He says, in order to create bleos, you only need. How hot does water have to be to create a bleo? Yeah, it's a lot of fun. How hot does something need to be in order to kasher with Hagalah? How hot? To kasher with Hagalah. How hot is when you're kashering with water? What do we always say? Kasher with?
Boiling
water. Right? It's got to have vesichos. It's got to be boiling water. Those two are the same? No, obviously not. Yatzalah, this is much, much less than other vesichos. So, it could be, says the Shach, if you boil water to roast it, meaning I cooked meat at 12 o'clock, at 5 o'clock I cook water to roast it, then yeah, you know, I don't need Rabbeinu Baruch anymore. According to the Shach, I'm good. I kashered it. But what if when I cooked water that afternoon at 5 o'clock, I cooked it to gatzoledas? I didn't cook it to roast it. So according to the Rashba, I didn't kasher anything. I didn't make a tam kalush because I didn't do any form of hagala whatsoever. But I did enough to affect bleels, and therefore you're going to have to start the clock again on the 24 hours, according to Rabbeinu Baruch. Now, that's a little bit hard to accept, this chiluk, because what that's assuming is that what the Rashba says Kol Yom Nasa Gil Chavero, that I can cook through my daily cooking, I can kasher rather through my daily cooking, that it places a significant limitation on the Rashi. Right? What's it assuming? Yeah, I can kasher through my daily cooking, presuming that I cook to the point of a boil. The Rashi never said that. And Adra, the Rashi's entire point was against that. The Rashi's entire point was, don't worry about any of the rules of kasher. Normally, in order to kasher, you need to hit every inch, every centimeter of the whole pot. Normally, in order to kasher something that needs nibun, you need to do nibun, and Adela doesn't work. Don't worry about any of it, because you don't really need kasher, you just need to weaken the tap. I don't know, maybe even if it doesn't fit to roast, if it's enough to weaken the tap. I mean, the Rashi's point is you don't have to think about it. Just the fact that you're cooking on a daily basis means that it weakens it enough, that that's good enough. So to then be mechadei, so oh, but it's not al resicha, so it's not going to be good enough because that doesn't work for agala. Stop hacking me with the rules of agala. We suspend all the rules of agala according to the Rashba. And furthermore, the Shach says, and this one is just like it's a pellet that he says this. I don't even know what he means. That maybe the Rabbeinu Baruch was worried that you didn't heat it up all the way to the top, meaning maybe Erech Na would rely on the Rashba. That's only if you cook a full pot. But maybe the Rabbeinu Baruch was concerned that you only cooked a pot that was filled 80% of the way, and therefore it's not going to really kasher the previous bliya. I mean, what on earth? The Rashba's whole point. The Rashba's whole point was that you don't need to have it filled all the way to the top. That was all chiddush of the Rashba. That was all kasher of the Rashba. Right? The Rashba started off by saying, I don't get this. How does it work that each day's cooking is going to kasher yesterday? When I cook today, am I really filling up the pot all the way to the top and having an overflow and everything? No! Elamai tam kolosh. For tam kolosh, that's good enough. Yatei rabala tam kolosh, that's good enough. So now the Shach is going to say, oh, Rabbeinu Baruch wasn't satisfied because, even though he agrees with the Rashba, but he's just nervous that he didn't fill it up all the way to the top. The Rashba knows he didn't fill it up all the way to the top. That was Rashba's whole point. Then the Shach says that the Rashba is correct. Kashering works in the Midrash because Bukhashikah. And the Gemara says explicitly that it works because of Hetei Rabala, which must mean exactly what the Rashba says, that Hetei Rabala, and therefore we rely on Tam Kalash. And since all we showed him hold Hagala works on Klei Midrash, it must be that they're all agreeing with the Rashba. That's also difficult, because the Marika Shtifa happens when the time is still mutter according to the Rashba. Because once it's time this, it's too late. And yet, there's a machlokas Rav and Rav in the Tzmaisar Kabanos, where the Marika Shtifa is before or after it becomes Nosa. So if it's after the Zman Issa, the Kashrut in the Mikdash has to be based on something else other than time. Okay, so the whole Mikdash Kesef is a little bit of a pebble. But that's the discussion of the Rashba that appears here on the page of Shulchan Aruch. And it's a question whether we possibly like this Rashba. We assume that we don't, I think. I think we assume we do not possibly like this Rashba, even though the discussion says Muslim Kala Poskin. The reality is that the later Poskim only use it as a tziruf, as a sniff. And what the Rashba says about all Kalim is really essentially what Bali Yitr says about Kli Cheretz. Why? What's Bali Yitr? So let's just point out the other two Shitos and Rishonim that are highlighted here on the page of Shulchan Aruch. The Taz highlights three Shitos and Rishonim, as I mentioned before. The middle one is the Rashba. First Shita and Rishonim that Taz highlights is the Shita of the Bali Yitr. Bali Yitr writes that you can kasher Kli Cheretz. You're able to kasher Kli Cheretz. And he then says that if you cook chicken soup in a milchit licharas, it becomes totally mutter because the second cooking kashers the first bliya. Right? So I had a milchit licharas, I cooked wacky mac in it last night, and now I cook chicken soup in it. It's fine, it kashers it out. Chazal, we're only also not to kasher licharas with bliyos of iser, but it's hetei rabala, you're allowed to kasher it out. All Rishonim disagree. Particularly by Kli Cheretz, because they have Kli Cheretz and they don't have Kli Cheretz Leon. We assume that the Leos go into Kli Cheretz will never come out. So the Rashba was like a modified version of the Bali Yitzhak. The Bali Yitzhak went further than the Rashba. The Bali Yitzhak said that this even works for Kli Cheretz. The Rashba was Mechadeh, that you can have one cooking kasher out the previous cooking as long as it was Hetei Rabbala. The Bali Iter said one cooking kasher out the previous cooking when it's a terubala, even on kli cheres. Okay, so that's a wild sheet of the Taz works on. The third sheet of the Taz works on is a chumra of the Ri Halavan. The Ri Halavan suggests that a kli cheres can be balei of its own name without any slaves. Meaning, we normally have a principle called kavush kumavush. Right, that if we have something that's kavush, something that's sitting and soaking cold, that it could affect beliefs. So, says to be a lover, by kli cheres, you don't need sitting and soaking for 24 hours to affect beliefs. Kli cheres are so porous that whatever you put in the kli cheres is already going to be balea even without made slaves. But then he adds a kula to that. And he says, if you keep cold things in a kli cheres 3 times, then all the porous crevices and whatever of the kli cheres are already saturated from those bleos, and it's not going to be able to be boleah through kavush ever again. So the real love is a chumra and a klut. Right? The chumra is that even less than me'es la'es, you're going to be able to be mavliya into the kli cheres through kavush and cold, through cold kavush. And the kula is, but once you did that enough times, let's say you used the kli cheres for cold milichut 3 times, then don't worry about any cold flesh that you ever put in that kli ever. Because it's saturated, so no time of flesh is going to get in. If you put cold flesh, obviously if you heat up flesh, it's going to be a problem because that actually affects gleos. But don't worry, if it's fully saturated from kavush, it's not going to accept anything. Okay, that's the non halachalamaita section of the Rebbe. Just the shittos rishonim that the Taz and Shach thought are worthy of discussing, so we discussed. But it's not super halachalamaita in terms of that Rashi. But now we get something that is very super halachalamaita, and that is the Rambah over here. So again, there are 3 topics in this simin. First topic is very much halachalamaita. What happens if you cook in a fleshy pot? You cook milchik in a fleshy pot, or fleshy in a milchik pot. More than when it's supposed to come, not as little as the status of the pot, but it's the status of the food. And in order to get that straight, you just need to be asked shaylos. And you get enough times, and then it just comes like that. Because those are pretty straightforward halachas. There's nothing too fancy about that. Right? In terms of the food being kosher, the pot being drained, but you get enough shaylos when you get enough shaylos. And Verizon said that he used to. Very so interesting to hear a big Talmid Chacham talk. Rav Shaffer said when he was learning for Smicha, so he would learn the Simin, he would find when Rav Meisha had Shuvahs about it, so he would look at the Shailas that Rav Meisha had, then he would close the Ibris Moshe, he'd write his own Shuvah, and then he would compare his Shuvah to Rav Meisha's Shuvah to see if he said the same thing. That is not how we expect every Smicha guy to study Smicha. Rav Reisman said very similarly, he said when he was living in Yerodea, he opened up a Tuf Tam Das with Shlomo Kluger, and he looked at all the shaylas, and he went through with his chavrusa, a mahalich to answer. He didn't say he wrote a tshuva, he said a mahalich to answer, and then he'd see it. Shlomo Kluger said the same thing. And he said he never did. Both reported that they never did. Meaning Rav Shaftar said Rav Meisha always we were step for step. He said I was here, there. And then he pulls a Gemara and a Priestess that I knew the Gemara and Priestess, but I never would have thought to link it to this and to that. Like he said, it's just unbelievably is it not just his recall, his ability to apply things that you never would have thought to apply. That changes the whole picture of the tshuva. So such a Baal Mechadesh that Rav Meisha was. People think Rav Meisha was so traditional and Rav Soloveitchik was full of chidushim. So Rav Soloveitchik was just a goatee. He was not full of chidushim. In Halacha, his derech was very very traditional. Rav Meisha's derech in Halacha was not so traditional. He had a lot of very great chidushim. Rav Reisman said that with Rav Shlomo Kluger. Shlomo Kluger, he was always right. He never got it right. He said, but it's Pashut, why? He said, why is he publishing a Jew? Someone asks, I dropped a little bit of milk in my drying pot of chicken soup. He's not writing a tshuva about that. He wrote a tshuva when he had a chiddush that no one else thought of. So if there was some shaila that gave him opportunity to say a chiddush that no one else thought of, so then he wrote a tshuva. So you're not going to think of Rishon Kluger's chiddush that no one else thought of. So you'll be awful. If up until that chiddush you were good, then you know you're good. Okay, but now we're going to talk about something very, very much Nogei Lamaisa. Someone grabs a lid of a pot, usually the husband, and it's the wrong gender lid, and he puts it just like... he's the wrong gender person to be. Whatever. So he takes the lid of the pot and he puts it on the pot, and the fish can live on the middle of the pot, and vice versa. And now you're gahat tzar. So says the Rama. A lid of a pot is the same as a pot, the Rama says. Meaning, a lid of milk in a pot is fully milked. I don't like pour milk onto the lid and cook in the lid like I do in the pot. Fully milk is anyway, even though it doesn't actually touch the milk in the grunts. But Rav explains that the lid becomes milchit because the amount of steam that hits the lid is what Rav Shach refers to as hevel, right? That it's like, it's ki'ilu, the actual liquid itself. It's such a heavy thick steam that hits the lid, and the condensation is so strong that it has the same status as the fruit itself. Nedanaha says that there are those who are machmir to say that a lid has a chumrah beyond the pot. That a lid is always considered ben yoma, even after 24 hours have passed. And the Ramah says, this is a chumrah below tam, and I love it. Right? It's a straight Ramah. He says, it's chumrah below tam, and I keep it. Right? But why? I don't know, but it's a chumrah below tam. And therefore, even though we're machmir, like this opinion, if there's any reason to be makel, we'll be makel because it's a chumrah below tam. So the Ramah says, we're machmir this way. But because it doesn't make any sense, if there's any reason to be makel, well, you know, any other side to be makel will have to be makel. So, mamish b'lo tam, zero tam. So the Torah in Sifkan Beis on the Shach and Sifkan Dalet explain based on the Ramah's Shach what the Ramah is referring to. That it's not like a regular lid of a pot, the way you drink a lid of a pot. Apparently, the lid was very narrow and pointy at the top, and there was like this little. It came to such a narrow point at the top of the lid. That grime can get stuck in the in that little teeny area where you'll never be able to clean it out properly. Meaning, if you've got a flat lid of a pot, so just wipe it clean, everything's fine. But if you have, you know, that it comes to a point and it's like very narrow at the top, you didn't have pot handles, so it has to come narrow at the top so they can take it off more easily. So then you're never going to be able to clean it out properly. Oh, that makes sense now. We're not dealing with blios anymore. Once you're out of the world of blios, you're in the world of Be'en. So more than 24 hours doesn't help you. More than 24 hours only helps you in the world of blios. But Reisman pointed out that when you go to a museum, you'll see. He had a few observations about museums. One of them is that you'll see that if you look at old cavemen, you'll see that there's such lids of pots is what he said. His other observation is he said when he was dating, he took a girl to a museum, and he noted that everyone that was at the museum was either a woman or a man schlepping behind a woman. There were no men that were there on their own. And he said the girl was so impressed by this observation that, he said he was at a different museum where there was a woman that was demonstrating an ancient loom and how it worked. And he happened to have been teaching at the Shabbos that's mine, in a camp or something. So he started talking to the woman about the loom and how it works and all the details. And the girl that he was dating was so impressed and he was so kind to this woman. He said, I didn't realize I was just actually interested because I was learning, but she thought I was so kind, so she married me. So the other observation he had about museums, was in the home shiur when Rebelski was alive, he said, if you ever go to a museum, you've got to bring Rebelski with you because he'll know what to look for. But like, Rebelski was like, I mean, you can't say because you wouldn't like, you wouldn't appreciate being said, but like, probably the greatest Torah mastermind of the last several decades, you know, in terms of just knowing everything. But anyway, that's what Marshall said. That's what Tazim Shach said. We're talking about pots that is very narrow and top. So since Nosikam it applies after 24 hours, that's only on Bleos and it's not on the end. So it's not going to be the head of Nosikam Gam doesn't work over here. Is it still getting nowadays? So a lot of the handles that we have in pots are screwed on. They're actual screws that hold it in. And the screw normally has like these narrow little crevices in the screw to hold the lid onto the pot. You know, one could argue that that's at least a risk, as high a risk of something getting caught in those little cracks as the narrow lid of the pot. So the Taz writes that if you put an Eimu Binyam Milchut lid on top of a Fleshik pot, the food's going to be mutter if you have shish times the small, tiny parts of the lid. Meaning, once we know what it's all about, it's not about the whole lid, it's about that teeny, tiny section. So as long as you have shishim klape, that teeny tiny section where it comes to that point, so then Taz says you can be good because it's going to be buckle anyway. However, the Shach says you need shishim pamim shishim of the pointed part of the lid. He says that we're worried that the steam from the meat hits the actual mamashus of milchit food that's in that teeny crevice, and the flavor spreads to 59 times that area, and now it's fresh flavor of bas v'chalav in an area that's 59 times the size of that teeny crevice in the lid. So now you need shishim times times that in order for it to be bottled. Because you say chanan, it's shishim times that. The Kiveger asks on the Shach, and he says, Tmehani, Hamishoshen maskul artiyah, Vazeh olu maidla, habi kumon neger arota, Tein tzorech shishim rak neger atipo, Vlo nasa vlo bekdev nevela, Mosh kozor nor lel simu sadi beis of Zayin. He says, ah, you got a chal simu sadi beis, Shach, how do you miss this? You shouldn't need 3,600 times the food residue, because once the steam rises and hits the lid, then the food residue is considered to be connected to Tavshim. And when it's connected to Tavshil, right, if something hits connected to Tavshil, you only need Shishin. Okay, there are other reasons given for the Rambam's Chumrah, but that's the primary reason given by the Taz and the Shach, based on the Marashah. In the end of the day, the Shach says, I know that the Rambam says that he likes this Chumrah, even though it's Kubi Tav, and he tries to keep this Chumrah, but we're not Machmir. So even though it's an interesting Chumrah, it's not at all Halacha L'Maisa. It could be that it is halakha l'maisa if you have a pot that has like a screw like that. So maybe it would be halakha l'maisa at least without another sniff l'ha.
Is it true that
if it's bad?
Yeah, this
tiny
little
cone
bad, this
place
is gross, and it's nothing.
Well, no, if it's spoiled, so okay, it's a different story, right? I mean, if it becomes spoiled to the point where it's not really like this, so then in a chinam, it loses all of its food.
We're assuming it's like more than 24 hours,
but then you're going to eat it. Right, or it's not, right. Or the people who eat it, you know, if you don't tell them what it is, you know. Now, the Ramah then goes through just case by case. What happens if you have a milk lid on a flashing pot and vice versa? And essentially there are four scenarios. Hot lid, cold pot. Hot pot, cold lid. Hot pot, hot lid. And cold pot, cold lid. Right? So those are the four scenarios. The last one, cold pot, cold lid, is irrelevant. Right? Because obviously nothing's going to happen. Right? You take a cold lid, a cold milk lid, and put it on a cold flashing pot. So just take it off. If there was any liquid on it, so just wipe it off, and then you're fine, right? That's not going to be a problem. So the Rambam doesn't even get into that. The Rambam gets into three cases. Case number one that the Rambam says, we're going to be able to finish this today, but we'll at least start. Case number one that the Rambam says is that you put a hot flaked lid on top of a hot milk pot. So the pot, the lid, and the food is all tricked, right? Because the reason is that the steam from the food rises, it asters the lid, and then it asters the pot, and the rest of the food as well. The Yad Yehuda HaKatzer Ozayim explains, Mestama Shnei Masurim, Bein Tzarek Ladaktek Im Hazeya Ola, Yishum Tum Mestama, Kshum Achusa Ola HaHevel, Da Amayim Cham, In Lamayim. Bekibash HaKisui Nami Cham, Abikirot Tum Vamashu, Bnei HaKisui Mevliya Bamaychel, Bein Tzarek Ladaktek Klal Lameyatsa, Lerdus Bezeya Lamayla, Chen Daz Balamasa Pinyam. He says, don't start hacking about, I know, was there really Zayin necessarily? How much steam? Was it necessarily as close? You assume if it's on the fire and you take a hot lid and it's a hot pot, you just assume that it's all the problems. The pot is covered, you assume that there's a lot of steam when the pot is covered, and everything's going to become asur. The Chamut Daniel is medayim from the language of the Ramah, that a mashma of the Ramah, the b'shneim chavim nesar takeoff. The b'shneim chavim lo kasa di hischil lo hazia. The Ramah doesn't say when they're both hot, the hischil hazia, that if you see that began to steam up, that then you have to worry. It sounds like you put it on for a second, you already have to worry. That's quite a chumrah. Right, I would have thought, putting it on for a second, there's no way that's going to have the amount of zayin. But when everything is hot, along the lines of what Yad Yehuda said, that when everything is hot, we're always going to have to assume the worst. We're always going to have to assume the most hot. Second case, and then we'll do the third one for tomorrow. Second case is that the pot was hot and the lid was cold. So the Rama says that the food in the pot began to release steam, and the steam reached a heat of Yatza Levispo, then everything's going to be Asr because Tasa Adar. Steam heats up the lid, which now becomes Asr, which then Asr's the pot, and then the food. However, the Chumit Daniel's Medayit from the Rama says that if you cover the pot and quickly remove the lid, before there was time for the steam to accumulate under the lid, everything's going to be melted. Because the Rama changed the language over here, since the Hiskel Azia. So just like it's a Chumrah, when everything's hot, where the Rama didn't say the Hiskel Azia, so it must be that happens instantly. So over here, where only the pot was hot, but the lid was cold, the fact that he says the Hiskel Azia means that it's only going to be a problem if it was on the lid was on the pot long enough, and it actually has time to be Maschil Lahazia. So eventually tomorrow we'll get into Lulav Parsha, we'll get into the third case, some detail, and then we'll start some Sadi Dalin as well. Okay.